Hi, friends. The world got you down? Don't be sad. Listen to $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
$2 Late Fee is the podcast that celebrates the best decade of entertainment, the 1980s. We pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it holds up today. We also interview your favorite celebrities from that era.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Check us out at $2LateFee.com.
Ready to talk about some SNL sketches? This was your call on this one. Favorite Christmas SNL sketches?
There are a few things that get me in the Christmas spirit, like Saturday Night Live. Like, we've talked about the whole New York City setting. We've talked about how 30 Rock inexplicably makes me think of Christmas no matter what episode I'm watching. And SNL is honestly the same way. And I don't think it's out of left field. I think SNL, the season usually starts around September, right? Where we're getting, everybody's starting to go back to school, much like most shows. Yeah. And that Christmas feeling is right around the corner. And by golly, does SNL have a metric fuck ton of Christmas sketches. So my idea was, because we're not going to be able to talk about every single SNL Christmas sketch, and we could make whole episodes based around single sketches. So I reserve the right to do that later, like on another episode of us. Okay. Like, hey, let's break down this sketch.
Yeah.
So what we want to do, what my idea was, that Matt and I, we each bring our three favorites. We're not going to get into like super in-depth conversation about each of them, because like I said, I'm assuming our favorites we're probably going to want to talk more in depth about and stuff, but I just wanted to have like a cool lean back conversation about our favorite Christmas episodes or Christmas sketches of Saturday Night Live. So I'm thinking we kind of go back and forth, unless
that,
you had
that works. No, that works for me.
Sweet.
And I'll be honest, I had written down six specifically. Okay. So if you pick something that's in my top three, I will say that was in my top three, and we'll swap it out with one of the other three that would be an honorable mention.
Okay. All right. The thing I struggled with the most was putting things in order.
I have an order figured out for myself anyway, I've got one that I'm feeling like it's almost like a draft. There's one where I need to claim it for the draft.
Okay.
The rest, I could care. As long as we talk about it, I'm happy that one of us brings it up.
And my picks are not necessarily the funniest ones, but ones that made me feel good watching.
Okay. Mine are definitely leaning more towards funny.
Okay. So let you kick us off. Are you starting with number one?
Yeah. I'm going to start with my number one to get it out of the way.
Okay.
When you texted me SNL sketches, immediately the It's a Wonderful Life delete it scene
really
came to my mind. First of all, you know how much I love It's a Wonderful Life.
I do.
I also love Dana Carvey, specifically Dana Carvey's like spot on Jimmy Stewart impersonation.
Yeah.
And the idea of taking this beautiful, wholesome movie and then like at the peak of its wholesomeness, just being like, I just remembered where that money went. And then it just turns into like an angry mob beating the shit out of Mr. Potter. It's such like a fantastic juxtaposition of everything that that movie represents.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. I feel like we've definitely talked about this sketch before on here.
It's so fucking funny to me. Like it is something that I saw that sketch before I saw It's a Wonderful Life. So for a long time,
Same here.
And I didn't really get it. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of funny. They're beating up, whatever. Then when I watched It's a Wonderful Life and went back and watched that sketch, I was like, holy shit, that is so funny that it's like the idea that there's this deleted scene that essentially erases everything that the movie is about in like a matter of minutes. But yes, that is my, I would be remiss if I didn't claim that one for myself. But
all right. My number one, and it's so strange because it's not a comedy angle at all. I mean, it's kind of funny, but not really. My number one is Horatio Sanz, Chris Kattan, Jimmy Fallon, and Tracy Morgan.
I wish it was Christmas today.
I wish it was Christmas today.
That was my number two. That was my number two on the list.
Tear up. And I'm so, oh my God. I'm teared up as we talk about it. That song, just it is the sonic embodiment of us as people. It is, dude. Yeah. It is. Like November 1st, that song is blasting in my fucking classroom.
So
I don't care what your mama says. Christmas time is near. And so, like the innocence on Chris Kattan's face as he's about, or not Chris Kattan's face, fucking Jimmy Morgan. Fallon's face.
Oh, yeah.
As he's like just playing and he's singing along with it. And fucking Chris Kattan's doing his fucking head movements.
Tracy Morgan's
doing nothing.
I think it's very funny. I've actually covered this song once.
Really?
I was playing a Christmas show, and I think I've talked about Saint Mort before. You've never really experienced Saint Mort live, I don't know. Saint Mort was this weird concept that I don't even know what to fucking call it, but it was like if you booked a Saint Mort performance at a show, you knew that you were going to get something different every single time. I never did the same set ever.
Yeah.
And it would always be, well, at least he tried, was going to be like the walkaway thought. So the reason I covered I Wish It Was Christmas Today,
which is titled Christmas Treat, for those of you.
Really?
Who don't know.
I had no clue that was the name.
There are multiple covers on Apple Music and Spotify, but the original is not on there. So that's what you got to Google when you look for it.
It stemmed from a concept of I wanted to record a cover song duet with myself.
Yeah.
So I had a projector and all of a sudden my face from my bedroom shows up and it's just like, Merry Christmas, Matt. And I'm like, hey, Merry Christmas, Matt. And it's like, you want to do a Christmas song? I was like, hell yeah, I want to do a Christmas song. And then like, I would be playing the rhythm and then the me on the video would play the dee 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 dee.
Oh, I love it. I fucking love it.
And it was so goofy and so stupid, but that was my shtick. Like I was doing a show, it would either be some crazy balls out. I got a full band to do like 90s covers where I'm like running around in a nurse's outfit covered in blood, screaming into like a megaphone.
Yeah.
Or it would be me with my acoustic guitar doing something fucking weird every single time.
I love it.
So I'm going to lean into what I think is one of the best things consistently from year one of SNL, which is their commercial parodies.
Okay.
And this is the newest thing on their list. I'm pretty sure this was like literally last year. It is the December to Remember car commercial one where Beck Bennett purchases a brand new car for his wife who's like, how are we going to pay for this? Because it's what goes through my head whenever I see those commercials where like the husband surprises his wife on Christmas morning
and
with a brand
with a ribbon on it.
It's not like, I think it's because it's so fresh in my head, but like that, I remember watching that particular sketch because that was probably right when I started to be like, oh, instead of watching SNL, I can subscribe to their YouTube channel and then Sunday morning have everything given to me in individual bite-sized pieces. So I was like really starting to just watch everything through their YouTube page. And that one just tickled me really. It's like one of the first years I was watching SNL again regularly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
yeah, I don't, not, I, I'm not familiar a lot of nostalgia, with that one.
But yeah, it's worth checking out. But let's hear your number two.
My number two, and it is it's kind of a generic pick. I think it's on a lot of people's number one lists, as if people sit around and rank their favorite SNL.
As we found out, there's at least a couple websites.
There are. And this is one that, like, it's my mother's favorite, and that is NPR's Delicious Dish. Sweaty balls.
That was next on my list if you had taken another one of mine.
Is absolutely, and I think it's hysterical, and I think it's a product of the people that did it. Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon, and Alec Baldwin, who I've gone on record saying, and unfortunately things took a downward spiral on Alec Baldwin, but he's honestly one of my favorite actors. And I think he's absolutely phenomenal in this.
It's one of the sketches where three lesser people would have absolutely broke.
Yep.
And it's the fact that none of them ever break the very dead seriousness on their faces while they're talking, because if even one of them started to chuckle, it would ruin the whole thing. But it's like they are so locked in with sincerity that it's like unbelievably hilarious.
I love your balls.
Yeah. Oh, I like the way your balls feel inside of my mouth.
I like the way your balls feel. Your balls are so smooth.
Yeah, that's the sweaty balls guarantee.
It's so good, man. And I just, that's the one that if I don't watch like the Christmas specials every year, that's the one that I have to watch every year for sure. You're cracking up.
Because I just realized my segue into my number three.
Yeah, go for it.
So, you know, you're talking about some balls, but let's move up a little bit to the shaft where you can find a dick in a box, which is my number three.
Oh my god, that was a great segue, dude. This was like our first taste of Lonely Island too, or I think so.
It was early. I'm pretty sure Lazy Sunday was before this,
but
this was like this. Lazy Sunday had a pretty decent viral success. It had nothing on when Dick in the Box came
Dick
out.
Dick in the Box was fucking everywhere,
and I mean Dick in the Box was so big they continuously did sequels with those characters anytime Justin Timberlake was on the show, right?
Yeah,
you got It's Not Gay in a Three-Way, The Golden Rule, you got Mother Lover. Like they you know what though, the funny thing is, like, as a hardcore Lonely Island fan, I don't really like the Lonely Island R&B tracks. I think that they're so good at rapping that I want them to just stick with that most of the time.
I agree.
But Dick in the Box is an undeniably hilarious song.
Yeah. So I'm struggling, dude, because there are like three more I want to talk about.
Well, name one more and then we'll just knock out some. I have one more honorable mention.
All right. I think my third one. Okay. And it's gone back and forth between these two. I think I'm going to go Consumer Probe Irwin Mainway, which is Dan Aykroyd selling his toys. And do you remember this one?
No.
Fuck it. All right. So Dan Aykroyd is being interviewed. He is the owner of a toy company around Christmas time. And he sells toys that are completely dangerous. You've got Switchblade Johnny, which is an action figure where you hit the button and instead of it like kicking, razor blades pop out of its arms. And he's like, what are you gonna do? It's a toy, it's an action figure, boys play with them all the time. What are you gonna take action figures away from the boys? Nah, you're not gonna take action figures away from the boys. And she's like, well, what about this new toy you guys have, Bag of Glass? And it's literally just a plastic bag filled with glass. He's like, yeah, it's the Bag of Glass, you know, kids have all the fun for you. You don't want to take everybody's fun away from them. And she's like, well, what about a nice toy like this toy telephone? And he's like, all right, I see this toy telephone, right? I'm just going to play with this toy telephone. Look, I'm talking on the phone. I got the cord. And then he wraps the cord around his neck and goes, look, ah, look, any kid can choke himself on it. He can choke himself on it. I find that absolutely hysterical. And there's just something about it that gets me. I miss peak Dan Aykroyd. And I know all those people are really old now, and that makes me sad.
Look, I am okay with it. I think that Dan Aykroyd is still doing Dan Aykroyd's thing. From everything I understand, he's still the nicest man in Hollywood.
You know, I still haven't watched Ghostbusters yet.
So here's my concern.
You know, I rented Ghostbusters from Redbox and never took it back to the Redbox and still have not watched it.
Oh, God, Dylan.
Like, I accidentally bought Ghostbusters from the Redbox.
Dylan,
so it's just
put it on tonight.
Disc in a plastic case.
Dear God.
Dude, I need to watch Star Wars for the 1,000th time. What are you talking about?
But, like, I'm worried for you with Ghostbusters because I've noticed a thing that happened. Actually, you'll probably be fine.
Okay.
I've noticed a trend in 2022 and 2021 that really upsets me.
Okay.
Which is the great divide of people seeing a movie in theaters versus people seeing a movie from the comfort of their home.
Okay.
And I'm seeing this happen with The Batman now because that's hit streaming sites, where it's like the people who actually pay money and sit in a theater and take in their evening
really
of entertainment came out and they're like, this was great. And like all the people who bitch about it when they're watching at home, I know how I watch movies at home. I'm like, you're not fucking paying attention to the movie. You're passively probably watching the movie. You're dealing
Listen,
with
Listen, man,
that,
Batman did not need to be 3 fucking hours.
No, I'm not like, look, I'm not saying Batman's a flawless movie.
Okay.
I'm just saying, like, I saw the same thing happen with Ghostbusters. I saw the same thing happen with Dune. Like, the people who saw Dune in theaters loved it.
Yeah,
and hated
I have
it.
Not sat down to watch Dune yet either, but I really am looking forward to that
but
one.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that I'm, because of the pandemic, I really saw this divide of, like, no, there is something about seeing a film in a theater where it's like, is it Stockholm Syndrome? Maybe. Or maybe it's just because, like, for me, my phone is shut the fuck off. It's not just silence. I shut that shit down. I am unreachable for the period of time that that movie starts until it ends because I am fully immersed in it. And I feel like there's so many movies that, like, if you're not fully immersed in it and you're, like, dealing with animals running around the house or, like, your kids are crying or, like, you know, having just casual conversations with the people that are with you or you're just, like, playing on your fucking phone, like, you're not going to be as immersed to walk away and be like, oh my God, that made me feel things. And that like hit me in a certain way.
I get it. My thing is,
I get people are scared to go to the theater still. And I respect that. Like but I'm just saying like, I get it. You don't want to go to the theaters, but also don't just be like, well, everybody who saw this in the theaters is completely invalid for their opinions. That
okay.
It's good.
All right.
Because you and I both agree on this. Telling people that their opinions are invalid is fucking infuriating.
Yes, it really is. It really is infuriating. I did put up something about the Batman the other day. I hope that's not what you were referencing.
No. I actually must have missed that. It was over the weekend. I wasn't seeing a lot of stuff online because I was at a wedding. So
my biggest issue with the Batman, and we're not reviewing the Batman, is just, again, I didn't think it needed to be 3 hours. I think there were a lot of instances where we had a lot of slow-mo shots that I'm like, bro, please, let's fucking go.
But I listen, I will say that I think with the Batman, and this is the end of the Batman review section, but I think that it is not a perfect film. Anyone who's saying it's a perfect film is wrong. Yeah. I have a few friends who absolutely hate it because they just thought it was so nihilistic and not what they needed to be watching at that point. And I think that
that's fair.
What I will compliment this movie is that I think that almost every single actor is bringing their fucking A game in their part. I think Paul Dano is finally getting some very well-deserved respect and attention. And for once, it only took, I don't know, since the 60s to have a Batman movie, you know, the Detective Comics Batman, where he's a goddamn detective. Yes.
Also, like, Colin Farrell fucks, dude.
Dude, I had no clue it was him until I was watching the closing credit and Colin Farrell's name popped up. And I was like, who the fuck was he?
I think the only other thing I didn't like was I didn't like the way the Batmobile was. I thought it was a very not fun Batmobile. But
I think that was kind of the point. Like what I do like about the movie is stuff like, you know, Batman parachuting out and like eating shit, because it's like he doesn't know what he's doing. He's not an expert. Like everything is kind of sloppy. So it's I
need to watch it again. I think Teddy and I watched it at a point where it was like, hey, do you want to watch this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we both felt like we needed to, because like the conversation was like, still happening.
Yeah, I was fucking stoked. I saw it like 2 days after it was released, because I was like,
see, we waited till it was here. But I'm also an anomaly, because I know you're having that conversation about people going to theaters versus people that watch it at home. I am a fucking staunch Halloween Kills defender. So.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I know you are an anomaly in that sense. No, but you're also, let's be honest, you're also not that much of a Halloween Kills defender as much as you are a, come on, let's not sit here and pretend this is the worst thing that's happened to the, like,
that's more,
that's my stance on, I think that the Netflix, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre film was pretty bad, but the people were acting like it's the worst shit ever happened to the legacy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Dude,
like,
I can't, there is this movement now where people are like saying they loved Texas Chainsaw 3D, which was
wild.
Fucking awful.
Yeah, no, that's a bad call. You know what? Another great example, though, and I feel like we're getting to the point where we're going to start seeing this, too.
Yeah.
Something that you and I both love. I think that the Scream 5, like, people who didn't see it in theaters and are now watching it on streaming are going to be like, this was really overhyped. This was bad. Yeah. This was stupid. Like, it's going to come, because they're not just sitting there being immersed into the story and the characters. They're, like, texting on their phone or, like, whatever. Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Sorry.
Dude, what do you have any more? Like sketches you definitely want to mention?
The only one I want to mention, I feel like for some reason, I thought you may have had this on your list.
I have three more I want to mention.
So maybe this is one of those three.
Yeah.
And this was one that I just saw in the last year or two because I subscribed to the Saturday Night Live YouTube channel. It started recommending a bunch of other sketches, and I just watched it out of curiosity. And I feel like sometimes SNL sketches aren't necessarily funny, but there's like a little bit of charm to them.
Yeah.
And I found the "You're a Rat Bastard, Charlie Brown" sketch.
That's like a fun one. It's not like on my three, but that's a fun one.
It's like just weirdly charming. And I think the only reason I watched it was that the thumbnail was Larry David playing Linus.
Yes.
And I was like, well, now I'm curious. but it's like, I can't tell you anything about it. I can't quote it. But every single time that I see the thumbnail, I'm like, let me rewatch that. Like, it ain't bad.
So the three, and I'm not going to get into them like the other ones, but I'll just kind of mention them. Number one is Steve Martin's Christmas Wish, or Steve Martin's Holiday Wish.
Yeah.
I love that one. You need to check that one out. He's like, what I want to wish for is peace to all the world. Actually, what I want to wish for is $1 million to me and peace among the world. Actually, what I would like to wish for is a million women, all scantily clad, surrounded by me, $1 million. Hold on, those women need cars. So what I want to wish for, and it just keeps going like that. Like, it's, I'm not like doing it justice.
It's like almost like the early version of like the I'm leaving scene from The Jerk, where it's like it just keeps building. Steve Martin was so good at that. What are your other two?
The other one is John Malkovich.
I saw this come up on a list, and I was like, I am going to watch this.
Oh, you've never seen afterwards. It? I am not going to talk about it. You need to see it.
I feel like just the setup of John Malkovich reading "Twas the Night Before Christmas" is more than enough for me to
be interested. So good. It's so funny. And my third one is not really recent. It's crazy that this was actually like a long time ago now, is Rappingville. Justin Timberlake and Jimmy Fallon. Each of one of them's playing a wrapping paper and one of them's playing a bag, and they go into like a whole spiel of like battle rapping each other to modern.
I want to say something as well, and I hope that I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I feel like you're going to fall in the same category as me. I think that it's noteworthy that neither one of us brought up the Hanukkah song. And that's not because I'm anti us talking about Hanukkah on the Christmas podcast, but it's because I've always thought that that song is overrated as fuck. Like,
you are putting words in my mouth. Okay. I do not. So here's my thing, is the reason I didn't say the Hanukkah song is because my version of the Hanukkah song is different from your version of the Hanukkah song. Because the version I prefer is Hanukkah song part three.
Oh, see, and I like part two. See, what I'm saying like is the SNL, the original SNL performance is not that good.
No, I like part three. And what I like the most about part three is it came along with Eight Crazy Nights, which we will talk about.
I know
eventually. I know.
I've avoided that movie this long.
It's I adore how dumb that movie is, and I love the songs in it. But at the end, he does a part three of the Hanukkah song, and there's like a live version on it that he did for SNL, and he brought out like Schneider and stuff like that. And to me, that's the one I have more nostalgia for. So I like Hanukkah song part three. But I don't associate it with SNL as much as I do just associate it with that movie, even though I know the original was.
Yeah. SNL. And I do want to clarify, I am, when I say it's overrated as hell, I am legitimately talking about the actual performance on Weekend Update.
I
think that the recorded versions that he did live for his different albums are just better versions of that song. It's
for sure.
Same thing with Lunch Lady Land. The album live version of Lunch Lady Land is better than the SNL version of Lunch Lady Land.
Yeah. Honestly, I could sit here. We could do a part two to this list like next year. We could name so many Christmas SNL skits that I didn't get a chance to talk about. Well, I highly recommend to anyone who is like us, which I assume if you listen to this even once, you are somewhat like us. Next year around Christmas time, figure out on NBC when they're going to air the Christmas special. Because what SNL does is they take the, it's a 2-hour event, and they just take the, it's a best of, it's a best of their Christmas skits. There is a version of it on Hulu right now if you want, like, or maybe it's, wait, Peacock now. Sorry. Okay. It's on Peacock now. If you want to like give yourself some SNL Christmas cheer in the middle of May, that works for you too. But for real, seek this out. It's so cool. I love SNL, and even when it's bad, I still like talking about SNL.
Yeah.
So props to that.
Yeah. No, I think that this will definitely be back. We need to, I'm saying this on the air so people can hold us to it.
Yes.
You and I really need to crack down next, by the time October, November rolls around, just like bulk recording as new shit drops.
Yeah.
So that even if we're not releasing it as it's in the ether, we can like really dedicate January, February, March to like our first thoughts on like when these new things came out in the previous year.
I hope we get a slew of Christmas stuff that isn't too. Like your new Netflix fucking princess bullshit.
Hey, we got 8-bit. We got 8-bit Christmas.
We did get 8-bit, but I feel like Christmas 2021 was lacking on the new content front. Besides,
I think we got 8-bit. Like even on the Netflix front, we got like Castle for Christmas, and that was like it on the, like it wasn't, there was not a lot coming from anything. And then you and I just both, I did finally watch the newest Home Alone movie, but you and I were like flat out refusing to
Touching it. And I'm what are your thoughts to, was it good that I refused to touch it?
Oh, it's a train wreck. Okay, I mean, cool. I think we would have had a hilarious episode about it it would have been no holds bar about it. But
yeah,
I don't ever want to watch it again. So.
Oh, never mind then. Or could you do it based off of memory?
If we're going to do an that is the only way you'll ever get me to watch that movie again is to do a podcast on
You know for a fact you and I are going to be sitting there and like, God, I can't think of anything to talk about this week. You want to just talk about the newest Home Alone movie?
Fair. All right.
That's probably going to be next week.
Yeah, probably. Well, Dylan.
Yes,
I don't care what your mama says.
Christmas time is near. Whoa, oh, whoa. Hop, hop, happy holiday, have a great
there. Are you obsessed with things that happened before your time? Well, if you are, join me, the host of Before My Time, Gelsey Laurie, to discuss the wonders of the yesteryears that we weren't around to enjoy ourselves. You can find us on all podcast platforms.
Soon you'll be swaying, so come on, sing along.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.